The Rapids podcast is presented by Advocare, the official sports nutrition partner of the Colorado Rapids.
Trash is picked up by Bobby Berwin.
He's back, and he's back with a bang.
Here are your hosts, Richard Fleming and Connor McGahee.
Well, greetings from Salt Lake City, where the Rapids road trip has taken them ahead of Saturday's contest with Real Salt Lake. I'm in Utah, and Richard Fleming is somewhere over the rainbow on the other side of the Rockies. And between us, we'll pick our way through the last two games. A sneak peek at a game of the Rocky Mountain Cup, game number two, to be specific. Since we were last with you, the Rapids have played DC United and Portland Timbers. One home, one away. Sadly, both ended in defeat. Now, we won't hammer Jared Watts with audio from that goal last Saturday, but it does need discussing, especially because DC United won on another own goal from Atlanta United on Wednesday night. But we go back to last Saturday. Richard Fleming, have you seen anything like that before?
I think we've all seen some of those real head scratches of own goals where you've got to ask yourself how it happened, why it happened, and what led to it. And I think Jared Watts's own goal slides comfortably into that category. What I will say, and it took us all by surprise, but when we look at the replay, we can see clearly that Jared Watts didn't look up. We can also see that he hit it too hard. And we can also see that he put it down the centre of the goal. Now, growing up and one of the basics that you teach youngsters playing the game, coming into the game, is if you're going to pass it back to the goalkeeper, you put it on the angle. You put it just wide of the goal, depending on which side of the goal you're kicking back towards. And it was wrong on all levels, and they were, basic mistakes. That can't be happening at this level of the game. You need more composure. I think also you need greater awareness. That said, that goal aside, and it was a real body blow, and it kind of sucked the air out of any momentum, the Rapids had their chances. And we'll look back, and yes, Bill Hamid had a wonderful game. He was in top form. But I'm at a loss as to why this Rapids side, in the position that they find themselves in, and with a new interim head coach to impress, and against the then bottom side in all of Major League Soccer, that we didn't see greater urgency from the very first whistle. And it's happened, you and I have spoken about it. Too often this season, the Rapids have had slow starts, or they've had a poor first half and a better second half, or a poor second half and a better first half. Performances that have been split into two halves. It was a disappointing result. Of course it was, a fifth defeat at home. But I think for me, bearing in mind where the Rapids are, what they know that they need to do, that we didn't see the urgency from the very outset. And that kind of, with the own goal, led us to a situation where they were chasing the game, had a much better second half. But we'll again look back on that first 45 minutes and say, as the home side, from the get-go, they had to be much more aggressive. They had to show a great deal more intensity, and we didn't see that last weekend.
Well, interim head coach Steve Cook even sort of had a rallying speech before the game, so where is the spark?
We will never question the effort put in by this side. They gave everything, but it was the approach more than the effort. Playing at home, a cagey start. We don't want to see this trying to wear sides down, trying to take them through to the 65, 70 minute mark, which can work and has worked, but I think other teams have wised up to that. What is needed is a much more aggressive approach to not allow teams to settle or build any kind of rhythm or any kind of confidence. The sense that, and every fan will be screaming, this is our backyard, this is our home, this is our field. And teams don't come in here and dictate the terms and dictate the play and dictate the pace. And I think the Rapids last weekend allowed that to happen. So yes, there was that rallying call from Steve Cook in the locker room beforehand, and those that have not seen it can go to coloradorapids.com. So I don't know where the disconnect was from that rallying speech and then the team going out 5-10 minutes later, the anthems, the handshakes, the backslaps, the little huddle, and then the kickoff. I don't know where the disconnect was, because the team certainly didn't start at the pace that many of us would have liked.
And it's a new system. 4-3-3, obviously there's a ton of space out there. And Cookie himself says that I don't care about, it's just how you line up on the kickoff, and then it's very fluid after that. But it's a shift in mentality even from how it was before to now, and that absolutely and it takes time for players to adjust to.
It will, but I think that if you're not seeing that fluidity, that clearly is a potential reason, having a new formation and not having that fluidity. But for me, it wasn't about the fluidity. It was about the urgency. It was about the mental approach more than the physical approach. The effort was there in terms of they were trying, but it was the approach that was taken by the team, because as I say, you can't have the bottom team in DC United coming in and having a real good go at the Rapids first half, and the response from the Rapids didn't kick in until the second 45 minutes, and it did kick in. They had some wonderful chances that second half, but by then they're chasing the game, and now of course that five losses at home. And it was not the ideal preparation that the side needed heading into this run, or obviously now that they're in the middle of it, the run of four road games.
The first of those four road games was contest midweek at Portland Timbers.
Agby towards Maddox. Maddox in a dangerous spot. Back to Vitas. Vitas's cross. It's falling. Vitas into Nagby. Nagby chipping out Darlington. That is phenomenal. 2-0 Timbers. Well, here's a giveaway. It's Saeed, and Colorado gets one back. Mohamed Saeed came back on at Providence Park. Well, there he goes down, and it's waved off.
That left hand coming in. He's pulling up the jersey. Just there.
And we have a penalty kick. Great chance to go back up two goals, and it's wasted.
I thought we played well, to be honest. We created a few chances on the break. If we were a little bit more clinical and take better decisions in and around the box, I'm sure we'd get back 2-2 or even get a third goal. But, I think it's a good start. Going forward, we did create a lot of chances, and that's the most important.
You could tell that, instead of getting the ball, looking backwards at first, everyone was looking forward, especially in that first half, and a ton of space out there. How did you guys feel? Because I don't think you're used to playing with that much space on either side.
No, personally, I felt good. We did get the ball forward a lot, and I could get the ball and turn and face and try to go in behind, try to keep the ball sometimes. But, it was a great game by us, and hopefully, in the future, we can get better results.
Do you want to go back to your goal, though? Walk us through it real quick.
No, I've seen the defender take a bad touch, and he kind of rushed to play the ball. And I intercepted and just drove in. Really, I didn't want to shoot. I wanted to play to, I think it was Cerna on the right. But he made the run too early, and I just had a shot with my right foot.
Yeah. And sometimes when teams make subs, not exactly the change that you want. It felt like a lot of the energy and speed came out when those subs came in. Did you feel the same way?
Yeah. I did. The game kind of slowed down when we were on top of the game. I thought we did create a few chances, and I think they did well to recognize that and to make the substitutions they did.
It's a short turnaround. You have RSL, Rocky Mountain Cup, on Saturday. Guys go and have some regen in Salt Lake tomorrow. But, back-to-backs like that are tough. How's your next 48 hours look?
It's tough, or it's good for us. It's a way for us to forget about this result and concentrate on the next game. And that's all we gotta look forward to. We had a great performance today. We did well, created a few chances, and hopefully next game we'll take them and we'll win.
There's my chat with Moose Saeed post-game inside Providence Park. He's right when he suggests that they had moments going forward and were prepared to take the game to Portland, but then again, in fits and starts, albeit against a strong offensive Timbers team. Valeri not picked up, Nagby too easily, able to find some space. I will say that it was a back four playing together for the first time, and some of just out of their natural positions. That understanding, communication, leadership, sometimes out of step at very vital times, including that Diego Valeri goal.
Agreed. but I will again question the positions of the bodies on that Valeri goal. They were square on Vitas's cross from the left hand side. So and as our colleague Marcelo Balboa will tell you until he's blue in the face, you're preventing the ability to open yourself up. You've not then got a wider scope of the field and of the threats and of the movement. That lent itself therefore to ball watching. Makes it tough to track the runners. And if you look at that goal again, Valeri didn't move far. Watch what he does. And for those wanting to go back and look, the side view of that goal, so in other words, looking over the shoulder of Vitas as he crosses it, and you watch anybody looking to learn that little, you don't have to run 40, 50 yards and bust a gut. Sometimes it's just 2 or 3 yards or, you know, 10 yards pulling yourself away. You watch, he glanced across. He saw where the space was, he arced his run, and he was able to head home completely unmarked as players around him were watching. Better movement and a better understanding, I think, of that movement that Diego Valeri put in from his teammates. The teammates in possession, and we've often said this with the Rapids, is that the player in possession is shy of options, or the player in possession has to take another touch because the movement isn't there. We saw a situation there with Portland where the understanding and the connection between the person in possession and the person making the run was absolutely spot on. We move to the Nagby goal, and this was maybe we'll look back to the Rapids playing a 4-3-3, which is three lines as opposed to a 4-2-3-1. And I know there's fluidity within any formation, but I think what Nagby did was he found space in between those lines. Mm-hmm. Neat control, absolutely spot on control. It was a wonderful touch and a quality finish. But the Rapids have just got in that position, that close to goal, inside the penalty area, they have got to be tighter on the players. Now, this is a question that we've asked again a number of times. Do they zonal mark or do they man mark? And if they were zonal marking, you've got to be picking up dangerous players. You've got to be tighter to them, closer to their space that they're occupying. Because, again, history has shown us already this season, Freddie Montero, one of the smallest players on the park, was not marked. Vancouver got the equalising goal. So it's a mistake that the Rapids have made as a back line before, and they made it again on Wednesday. Two goals in quick succession. The marking defensively, the awareness of the threat was not there on either goal. And I think, I saw the match report afterwards, and there was some saying that Portland were all over the Rapids in the opening 20 minutes. I don't agree. Yes, Portland had their chances, Portland had the possession, but there was also some aggressive, positive moves from the Rapids going forward. But when you get hit by two quick goals, as they did on Wednesday night, in front of the Portland crowd, that puts you on your heels. But to be fair, the Rapids show character, got back within a goal. There was that silly tug on the jersey from Mike DeFont, which, you know, players, I think, will learn. They're beginning to learn now that with video review, those are the things you are not going to get away with. Not going to get away with anymore. They got out of jail. And then, you know, I do think the second half was a little flat. Disappointed that the Rapids didn't have more of a go second half. The last 5 minutes was everything thrown at Portland. I'd have liked to have seen the last 15 minutes. There didn't seem to be enough desperation in that second half to suggest that the Rapids were going to give it a real good go, and it obviously got away from them. But that was a game that, you know, at this stage, Connor, a point is not enough. Points. And what I will say is that people will look at that game in isolation, and they'll say, oh, 2-1 loss at Portland. Yeah, it's tough place to go, difficult result. But unfortunately, the Rapids are not in a position now where they can say, oh, disappointing, gave a good performance, but we lost on the road. The Rapids have put themselves into a hole, which now requires them to go to very difficult places and not just get a point. They've now, because of their performance over the first 20-odd games, they've now got to go to tough places and walk out with all three, and that's going to have to kick on Saturday.
One of those tough places is Rio Tinto Stadium, a facility that the Rapids have never won in. Before we talk about that, let's take you back to Portland on Wednesday. Wednesday morning, I left the team hotel and I took a stroll up Morrison Street and to the intersection of Morrison and 18th and Providence Park. And I took a lap around and I was sort of noticing that the building had been pieced together, and not in a scotch tape and make sure it stays up in a structural kind of way, but with different phases of time. So I was curious about the history of Providence Park. I did some research and found out just a little bit more about one of MLS's grander venues.
I'm here in the press box, or more aptly, the press gantry here at Providence Park, home of the Portland Timbers. I say gantry because, yes, that's the common vernacular for press box in Europe, but unlike most media home bases of stadiums throughout MLS, this one is only accessible by a catwalk that stretches over the upper covered portion of the stands on the west side here in Portland. So, as I sit here floating over what will be one of the most boisterous and hostile crowds in the league, I look around and see how this old ground has been pieced together ever since its original construction, costing $500,000 in 1926. Before the stadium, there was a Chinese vegetable garden, replaced by a field named after the Multnomah Athletic Club. The field hosted many gatherings, including the visit of President William H. Taft in 1909. But the first grandstand here dates back all the way to 1893, and finally was given full stadium expansion status in 1926. It was the site of the first overtime game in the NFL in 1955, concert venue for Elvis Presley in 1957, home to ski jumping, dog racing, and perhaps most importantly, the site of the final game of Pelé's professional soccer career in Soccer Bowl 77. When the Portland Timbers were selected for MLS expansion, $40 million were poured in to make Providence Park, then Jeld-Wen Field, what it is today. And now, even more expansion is in the works, as it was announced recently that new construction for additional seating along the east and northeast stands is forthcoming. Well, the Timbers boast sellout crowds of 21,144 every night, and tonight, as they host the Colorado Rapids, is no different. The Timbers Army is in full voice as their team play as hosts on a ground that is dripping with both rain and history.
Obviously, it's a difficult place to come and play, and I think Portland Timbers, certainly in an attacking sense, are a very, very good team. And you look at the game, I think our boys worked very, very hard and had moments of quality in that first 20 minutes on the counter-attack where a little bit more care, a bit more composure in that final area, maybe you can connect with a cross and a finish, and you go 1-0 up. And I'm disappointed with the two goals. I think, you know, if you give players 2-3 yards of space inside the penalty area, good players like Darlington Nagbe are going to hurt you, you know, and there's a reason that those players are where they are, because they've got quality and they've got some real abilities about them, and as a team they go forward very well. But you know, at 2-0 down, I bet there's a lot of people watching the game saying, you know, it could be 3 and 4 and 5 and 6 here, and the Rapids are going to probably fall down. But they didn't do that. The players gave everything they had and kept working, found a way to get back into the game 2-1, and you know, a little bit of good fortune, maybe a set piece late in the game, and we tie that one up and we go home probably in a little bit better mood than we will do.
In both of the last two games, even though the results haven't quite ended the way you would have liked, there has been a little bit more desire to get forward, to be proactive, to play more expressive brand of football. You feel like we're getting close?
I think, it's one step at a time, and right now it doesn't feel like a moment to pat ourselves on the back, really. But the reality is that we did create a couple of openings, and I thought Mo Saeed scored a great goal, and had it not been for, you know, a final pass maybe inside the penalty area, or a little pullback cross that we could have connected with, maybe a little bit better on the finishing, and I think we could have got a goal or two, you know. And I thought a bit of set piece delivery tonight, we might have got a better chance or two on it. And I think again the guys gave everything they've got. The one thing about this group in there is that they're bitterly disappointed, and that's not, you know, they've put everything out there. They've worked as hard as they possibly could. I mean, they're absolutely devastated they haven't got something. But that's football, you know. Sometimes it comes down to a couple of moments in the game, and Portland Timbers had two great moments.
Mohamed Saeed, his goal, what did you see from where you were?
Yeah, I mean, it was a nice little break, and Mo picks the ball up, and I think we had one or two passing options for him. He chose to take it on his right foot, which good for him. And I thought it was a great finish, and might have gone through a player or two. And I think it was a real clever finish from Mo. And I mean, I'll tell you what, he's got energy to burn, and he really puts a shift in for the team. And he's a clever footballer, and he's got a lot of ability with the ball, and he's an intelligent player. And I think I like what he brings. He got on the turn tonight and really drove the team forward at times when he broke lines, and that's what he's in the team for. He's there to break lines and create opportunities for himself and other players, and he did that tonight, so very pleased with him.
Another very good, very industrious Kevin Doyle performance. What does he need to this team?
Kevin Doyle's an incredible professional, and he doesn't get the credit that he deserves, because he is a fantastic player. He works his socks off every day. He's a consummate professional. He's been at the top levels of the game, and he's coming here now. And like a lot of players, sometimes they can come over here and maybe have a bit of a jolly and take it easy. But Kevin Doyle, every single day, is a fantastic professional. And as you saw again tonight, he doesn't want to come off the field. He wants to keep going, and we made that change. But he's a leader in this team, and he's a leader for these young players. And if anybody wants to aspire to have a career like Kevin Doyle's got, it's these kind of moments tonight where these young players have got to dig deep, and they've got to not feel sorry for themselves. Don't go moping around. They've got to pick themselves up and get back on with it on Saturday at Salt Lake.
And then just two more questions for you. One, the atmosphere tonight is cracking, isn't it?
It's a great place to come and play. I mean, as a professional player, you must be—you've got to be loving this, because it's absolutely fantastic. And this season, Portland are giving themselves a lot to shout about as well, so they can be very proud of their team. And you know, they're in here 2 hours early. And somebody told me that at 8 a.m. when a couple of our guys came training, people are in tents waiting to get in the stadium. So you don't see that in too many places around the world. I think it's a stadium and a fan base that anywhere in the world you would be proud of.
And then last question for you. You could arguably one of the most important games of the season coming up, the rivalry match with RSL. Talk us a little bit through it.
There's no question about it. I mean, our attention now, you know, the minute we finish this game, goes straight to Real Salt Lake. And it's a big, big game, because for the fans, who deserve a lot more than we've given them this year, they deserve the players to really give an unbelievable effort, and really they've got to drive the team on to hopefully get a win, because we need to keep the season alive. And if the Rocky Mountain Cup is something we can be playing for, the last home game of the season, then I for one will be delighted.
So what's the answer for Saturday and the visit to Rio Tinto? They've shown themselves to be more aggressive in this 4-3-3 the Rapids in just the two games played. Is it a game for Stefan Agner? Do you rest Doyle, start Baji? Will we see another complete switch along the back four, and does Skeltsen Gashi return? RSL will be buoyed following their 4-0 home win over San Jose Wednesday. They've lost one of the last eight, during which they've put six past LA and four past both Portland and San Jose. RSL is sort of clicking at the moment, Richard Fleming.
Yeah, I will say that obviously that 4-0 win over San Jose on Wednesday was a little bit skewed. San Jose had a man sent off, Anibal Godoy, 1-0. I think it's 61-minute mark, and three goals rattled in when San Jose down to 10 men. But yeah, Mike Petke has got this side believing. They've got healthy bodies back. They've got senior players back from international duty, and they've got momentum and confidence and an understanding and a belief. And it will be a tough place to go into this weekend. But if we're looking at slithers of silver lining, they will be without Kyle Beckerman, who's still a talismanic figure for Real Salt Lake. He picked up a booking on Wednesday night, so he'll be suspended because of yellow card accumulation. Look, Agner, Doyle, Gashi, Baji, this is a side that's now had two games playing in a 4-3-3, so I think that becomes a weaker excuse or a weaker reason for performances. And let's look at the last two games. Aggressive against DC United, 18 shots, 12 shots on the road, the most shots they've ever taken on the road this season at Portland. So it's clear that this is a side that is getting forward, that is creating openings, that is being aggressive in the final third. But it is at a detriment to the defensive responsibilities. And coupled with that is it's all well and good having chances, but from the 12 chances on Wednesday, they got one goal. And from the 18 shots last weekend, they got zero. So they need to finish those chances, and those shots need to be turned into shots on goal, and those shots on goal need to be more clinical. So it's asking a lot, and people might say, well, ease up, fella, you know. But we're not at a time where it's a kind of softly approach. The Rapids are struggling in the West. They are struggling in the Supporters' Shield. They're 13 points from the playoff places, and they have 10 games to go. This is now a time where everybody's aware of what needs to be done, and things need to be tighter and tidier at both ends. And look, it would be wonderful to kick-start a run at RSL on Saturday. RSL, of course, when they were at Dick's Sporting Goods Park, with a team that ended the unbeaten run in the regular season for the Rapids with that 2-1 win back in April that come from behind. So the Rapids need to go into to Rio Tinto. It's not been a happy hunting ground for them. They're 0-8-4 inside Rio Tinto. But, you know, again, records are there to be broken. Form is there to be, torn up and the reset button pressed. And look, they have had a quick turnaround, but so have RSL.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Colorado Rapids 2018 season tickets are on sale now. Don't miss out on the action as the Rapids take the field for 17 home matches at Dick's Sporting Goods Park next season.
And it's Marlon Hairston in the blink of an eye. They're back on level terms. This is some contest.
Go to coloradorapids.com to find out about the exclusive season ticket member benefits, including meet the team party, game day experiences, and stadium discounts. Go to coloradorapids.com.
Well, a reminder that the next home game is against New York City FC on Saturday, September 16th, the day after the U.S. women's national team tackle New Zealand at Dick's Sporting Goods Park, and the day before the annual season ticket member meet the team party, which is being held at the stadium after 2 years at Eglinton's. And now,
more important dates to remember.
It's the Gardell Homes Community Spotlight. We tell you of events and initiatives involving the club. The annual Eddie's Kids Dinner will be taking place on Sunday, August 27th from 6 to 9 p.m. at Del Frisco's in Greenwood Village. Community Ambassador Brian Mullen will be there on behalf of the Rapids. The generous giving of Eddie's Kids Foundation, Cronky Sports Charities, has donated more than 1 million tickets to local nonprofits, deserving families, teachers, and military since 1991. Our first Team Fit Clinic, presented by Ardent Mills and in association with Rocky Mountain Hospital for Children, will be taking place on Wednesday, August 30th from 5 to 6 p.m. at the Vickers Branch Boys and Girls Club in Metro Denver. Rapids performance analyst and strength coach Miguel Montelongo will be leading the clinic with the help of some Rapids first team players. And now, parting shot. This part of the Rapids podcast brought to you by Lunasul Tequila, made using only the best ingredients and classic techniques. Lunasul Tequila, one sip, and you know. Richard Fleming, what do you know?
Well, my issue this week touches upon the brave new world of video review. We know that it aided the Rapids in Dallas. It cost them a penalty that was put wide by Guzman at Portland. But my beef is not so much with what is picked up, but what is not. And I know there'll be people out there saying, we knew it'd be the thin end of the wedge, and now we're going to call on everything and we're going to review everything, and this is where the game kind of collapses. But like us all, and we saw some of it on Wednesday, and we see plenty of it throughout the season, the diving and the flopping in the game, it's a huge part and it's a horrible part of the game. So I'll throw this scenario at you. And as a referee, I'd like your opinion on this. If a player dives to win a free kick in open play and the referee buys it, and then the attacking team, having cheated to get the free kick, score from the set piece, is the original foul reviewed? I'm not sure, because I think under the rules of this video review system, after play has resumed, the incident is reset. So in a
That's
sense,
correct.
You've moved on. And yet that one incident, that one free kick that is won through diving, has a huge effect and leads to a massive moment in the game. And it's happening all the time. Now, it's tough, because if we call every potential free kick and question it as a potential dive, then the referee is going to be going to video review every 2 minutes. But there are passages of play in the game which I'm afraid do not at this point come under the jurisdiction of the video assistant referee, and yet can directly impact events in the game. Video review is still new. Certainly for the Rapids, of course, as we know, it's led to the correct decisions being made, both good and bad. But the cheating, diving aspect of the game, as prevalent as it is, sits on the fringes of this initiative. And my concern, and we'll see situations where wrong calls providing attacking set-piece options for team will lead to big moments. Free kicks around the box that are delivered, that get scored upon or lead subsequently to other incidents, whether a corner that you then score from. And it's tough. How far back do you go? But that is my concern, is that big areas of the game, diving, flopping, cheating, that are not part of video review but can then lead to those big moments which are part of video review, is maybe one of those kind of grey areas that this video review system could be ignoring.
Well, a reminder that the Rocky Mountain Cup Phase 2 is Saturday on Altitude Television and Altitude 950 on the radio, as well as La Invasora in Spanish 87.7. It's a late kickoff on Saturday night, 8 p.m. Mountain Time from Rio Tinto Stadium. We'll have you covered from top to bottom on ColoradoRapids.com and, of course, on Altitude Television starting at 7:30 and Altitude Sports Radio, AM 950, starting at the top of the hour, 8 o'clock. We hope that you'll join us from anywhere around North America or, in fact, the world. That'll do it for this week's podcast. For Richard Fleming, I'm Connor McGehee. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week after Game 2 of the Rocky Mountain Cup. Bye-bye.
The Rapids podcast is presented by Advocare, the official sports nutrition partner of the Colorado Rapids.